Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, you know, for an EB5 podcast, we've been talking a lot about E2 visas lately. Why is that?
Well, E2s have been very popular. It's not just EB5, Mark. We talk about investment visas, and E2s are also investment visas. And we also want to give the audience all of the information out there so they can choose the right options for themselves.
That's right. Options for themselves. And really, you're the advocate for your clients and these foreign national investors. And perhaps EB5 is that option, or maybe E2 is. And perhaps today on this episode, we'll dive more into the E2 visa. And maybe if it's an option for the listener.
In addition to that, Mark, because of the length of time that some of these visas are taking for some people, especially when they want to do their own business, for them, an E2 to EB5 is the option. Today, we really wanted to go into E2 issues, disadvantages, not just advantages. And that's one of the reasons why we choose our guests very carefully per topic.
We do. And today's guest is a repeat guest. We welcome back to the show, Jenhee Wild.
Jenhee. Yay. Hi.
Jenhee has over 30 years of legal experience. She first began as a prosecutor for Chicago, and then as an inspector general, and then special counsel and attorney advisor for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. You know, this extensive government experience gives her a government lawyer's perspective to help her clients. Jenhee represents only the investor side of EB5 and stays independent from any regional centers in order to keep her fiduciary duties clear of any conflicts. And we all appreciate that. Jenhee, welcome back to EB5 Investment Voice.
Oh, thank you for having me back. Hi, Mona. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Jenhee is one of the better people to talk to about E2, Mark, because, Jenhee, you experience all the problems with E2 visas, just like we do, right?
Yes. It seems like E2 has become a little more popular than it has been in the past few years.
Right. Well, a lot of that has got to do with the fact that the minimum amount has increased to 900. And I would say more than the minimum amount increasing, I would say it's more because of retrogression and backlog.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, the E2 has increased in popularity. And we've been hearing a lot of wonderful things about E2 from the people who are trying to sell citizenship by investment. So we thought that let's play devil's advocate and tell the audience some of the other areas that they really need to know.
Okay. Well, I am actually not one of those people that would advocate for third-party citizenship or third country citizenship.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I like that we have these diverse opinions on the show so yeah. The listener can choose for themselves.
Yes. I mean, you know, the retrogression on EB5 really is prompting this E2 business right now. And the countries that are subject to these retrogressions are countries that do not have E2 treaties with the United States, which means these citizens will have to obtain a citizenship somewhere else that has an E2 treaty with the United States and then apply for an E2. It becomes a little bit
extra steps and extra opportunities
extra
for failures.
Extra steps, extra cost.
Well, Jenhee, we've discussed in our previous podcast as well, we've had people here from Grenada, because mm-hmm. Grenada is the only Caribbean country which has the E2 treaty. And there are other countries too. And of course, The thing is, with the Caribbean, you can be a citizen very quickly, unlike some of the other countries. But right now, you have the Caribbean country of Grenada, you have Turkey, and you have, I believe, Montenegro. No, those are the two better ones. There are others. There are 10. But those are the two top ones at the moment with the cheapest amount.
I heard Malta. Has anyone done Malta?
Malta's very expensive. Malta's a great place for tax filings and things, but it's expensive. I believe it's 2 million just to... some figure up there. But it's not one of the most popular ones for someone who wants to have citizenship by investment for an E2 purpose.
But thing is that these third country citizenship and then E2 is still relatively new and relatively untested. So I am, as a legal professional, I am a little bit reticent to recommend full fraud to my clients, something that I haven't really seen the gamut of good, bad, and ugly. You know what I mean? So that's why I'm not really one of the ones that really push for third country citizenship and then E2.
Well, we look to see what the advantage or disadvantage is for the client. We have had some clients who actually do want citizenship of a country like Grenada because of tax purposes, and they want to just do E2 because they only want entry to the US. They don't want to stay here. But it doesn't make sense for somebody to put all their money if that's it, because by the time you do add up everything, it is a lot. If, for example, they have children who are in their teens and want to go to university, because then it just doesn't make sense, because an E2 would not be the right move for them.
That's correct. And that needs to be, again, stressed. E2 is a temporary 2-year visa. While the family can come with you, the investor, when the children reaches 21, they can no longer be a dependent.
Yeah, good point. So the first thing is E2 is not permanent, but it's not always a 2-year visa. You could always get a 5-year.
Yeah, depending on the size of the investment.
Well, we've seen just 6-month ones coming from places like Egypt.
Right. That's correct. That seems to be, again, fairly new development under this administration. In the past, it has always been about 2 years. And if you actually invest millions, I have had clients get 5-year E2 visas, but it's changing.
Well, I think it's important that you bring up the point of renewal, because people don't realize when they get their visa that they have to put a business into place where they can actually file again for renewal.
That's correct.
Because what happens at a renewal, Ginny?
Well, renewal is just like any investment visa category. At the beginning, you are promising them that this is my plan. This is how I'm going to conduct business. This is what's going to happen. At the renewal time, just like condition removal for EB-5, that's when you show them what you have done in the past. So in terms of E2 visa, you have to show that the business has grown, had some, employees that they have employed, and that the business is not just marginal. So those are the things that needs to be shown. And oftentimes, when you are doing a very small business, mom and pop shop kind of thing, that renewal becomes more difficult.
Yeah, and especially when some people want to file an E2 with a very minimal amount of around about 60 to 100,000.
Yes.
There's very little that you can do. The employees are not essential, but it is obviously something you want to show for growth. Because if in 4 years and 5 years you're still doing everything and you have no employees, then that I'm sure that's going to be a problem.
Right.
And I'm sure that the adjudicator looks at that at the business plan and the E2 to see, all right, maybe initially it might be seen as marginal, it may be seen as a bootstrap business, but eventually it should grow beyond a marginal business, one that could employ other people.
That's correct. And I am seeing more and more at the renewal stage, if you do not have any employees, you are going to get denial.
Mm, yeah. Okay. So disadvantages of E2s, Jinhee. First of all, you've discussed the fact that you do not really want for someone to go to a third party if they're not from a treaty country. But if they have no choice, I suppose they have no choice.
Yes.
That the issue of renewal is there. Mm-hmm. Other disadvantages. I would say that with something that we discussed just recently on our podcast were about issues relating to Iran was the revocation of an E2. It doesn't happen very often, but it just did.
Yeah, well, I mean, with the more countries being added to the travel ban, it could happen. It really could happen. And we don't know what's going to happen to all of immigration, not just E2, under the Trump administration too.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, Ginny, a lot of people do cut an E2 visa thinking that, okay, we've got this visa and we can enter into the country and now go and work and get jobs and do stuff. You are restricted when you enter on an E2, correct?
That's correct. That's correct. The investor obviously has to work the business. The dependents could go and work somewhere else, but the investor is restricted to the business itself.
But they can open multiple businesses. They're not restricted to a business.
That's correct. That's correct.
And the dependents are also eligible for EADs.
Yes.
EADs?
EADs. Employment authorization.
Yeah, Mark will tell us off. We're not allowed to use acronyms.
Nope.
Yes, dependents do get employment authorization, which is the nice part of E2.
Mark, a trend that we are seeing, and this is a new area because of EB-5, it's developers who actually want money, that realize that 900,000 is out of the gambit of a lot of people. So they think that they can come up with a project at a lower level, maybe 300,000 or maybe more or less, mm-hmm. and reach out to people in the same fashion that they used to for EB-5. The big difference is, for an EB-5 project, especially coming through a regional center, it can be passive. Mm-hmm. E2 is different. Correct?
That's correct. I mean, E2 has to be a more active management.
Have you seen denials for this reason?
Yes. I have, it's not my case, but I have clients coming in saying, I purchased a apartment complex and I hire the maintenance company that employs people, and I was denied. And that's based on the passive investment.
Right. Well, at the same time, that could also be an argument that the investment isn't real in an active commercial enterprise. It has to be an entrepreneurial type of business. But what we are seeing as well is that one has to be we are reluctant to put a lot of these projects out there for people to just say, yes, you can have that project because there is a management company or there is someone with control, because that's one of the biggest issues here. There has to be control.
And when we say control, that means the E2 visa holder needs to own at least 50% or more of that business, right?
That's right. You have to control that business. You have to be able to control that business.
Right. And we would argue also that one other arena for control is financial control.
That's correct, too. I had instances where people wanted to just put in $100,000. The business is worth, let's say, $500,000. They wanted to leverage and just have the E2 visa holder put in $100,000. My advice to them is that will not work, because when you're leveraging the business to get a loan and the loan to value ratio, and you don't have a financial control, not only, you know, you can have a operational control in name only, but you don't really have a financial control, and that will not work.
Ginny, what other reasons have you seen as a denial?
You know, again, no employees. You don't have to have employees when you're starting out, but you should definitely have a definitive plan to have employees. The whole issue about EB-5, E2, or any kind of investment visa category is that you are showing USCIS or the consulate saying, I want to invest in your country, the United States, and I am going to grow my business and I'm going to employ US workers, and it's a win-win for both you and me. And especially under Buy America, Hire America mandate from Trump, that employee section becomes much more important.
It does, but I would not say it's essential. But again, it depends very much on the consulate, because this is another issue with E2. Unlike an EB-5, you're not going to USCIS, or you can, but it's actually harder. Most of the time, you're doing it through a consulate. And we've had completely different approach to E2 depending on the consulate, with the same similar type of fact pattern. The consulate, for example, and you'd be surprised where we have had trouble. We've had trouble in places like Paris, in Germany, as opposed to some of the Latin American countries.
That's correct. And I have been hearing more European country consulates being worse than other areas. And I think that's mainly because of who they are sending to those posts. They tend to be a little bit more sought after posts, which means they're higher GS level. government staff level. And they tend to be much more in tune with the direction of the administration. So I think that's why you're seeing more denials over there. They're following the mandate of the administration, which is, again, Buy America, Hire America first. So if you're not really showing how you're going to create jobs for the U.S. workers, then they tend to deny.
Right. Have you seen denials on lack of experience? Because this is another big issue which we are seeing. Youths, young people coming here, university, they want to stay here, so they file for the E2.
Mm-hmm. Well, not personally. I still have 100% approval rating in all my cases here, but that's because E2 business has to be managed by the investor himself or herself. The correlating between their experience, education, and the business and how they're going to conduct the business is important. Maybe in the past, it was easy enough to say, here's $100,000, I'm going to do a alteration business, whatever, and get approval. It is not that easy now. So you do need to kind of check the box. What have you done before? What kind of experience? If you don't have experience in this area, why do you want to do it? And articulate all of that in right. the business plan itself.
You know, when I've done some of this work in the past, I've told people you need to pass the Shark Tank test. Or for Mona, for you, that'd be Dragon's Den. But you need to pass that test. So, for example, when you have an entrepreneur on the Shark Tank and they're asking for money, they got a great product, they got a great sales record, and the sharks turn around and ask them, yes, but why you? What makes you special? Why should I invest in you? And I think they're looking for that in the E2 visa. Even if you've got a great business idea, great business venture, you obviously have the funds and everything else is aligned, the adjudicator is looking at that and thinking, okay, but why you? What lends you to your experience for this particular role? Maybe it's something straight out of college, but if you can relate it to experiences that you've had and things that you've done and initiatives you've led, that gives you that unique special experience to run that specific business, then yeah, I think it would be easier. But you certainly do have to call that out and really bring attention to it.
Ginny, what are the acceptable uses of capital for an E2 business?
Well, it has to be operational. Again, it cannot just go and sit in a building and not do business. So it needs to be, you can pay rent for the business, but I would stay away from just buying a building and letting it sit.
It is, yeah, but it becomes difficult when you have someone who is a consultant, for example, and wants to open an E2 business, because they don't really have, other than buying an office space and whatever, they don't really have a use of the capital.
Well, you have the payroll cost, you have the, any kind of operational cost, even a consulting business, you have to have, you have overheads and you have payrolls.
Okay, so then looking at that, let me give you a scenario and ask you whether this could be utilized for E2. We have a client who wants to purchase a large building, and he uses money to purchase a large building, and then he opens a management center to manage that building. Is that an acceptable E2 project?
Well, I think if you have the management part as an E2, not necessarily buying a large building as part of, I invested $1.2 million and only $200,000 is being used for operational and creating jobs, it's really not going to be considered. At least if I was the adjudicator, I would question whether you are actually investing $1.2 million, for
right. example. Well, this is not just an investment visa. This is an entrepreneurial investment visa. So the government is looking for an entrepreneurial situation whereby you do start up a business, which brings me to one more situation, Jinhee. So in EB-5, an entrepreneurial visa, one of the biggest issues that I believe we look at, and one of our guests on one podcast had mentioned this some time back, is that prior to the emergence of the regional center, the issue was whether or not the investor had maintained their funds within the enterprise and not withdrawn them. Because if they had withdrawn them, then that would have obviously led to a denial, but also a technical fraud if the money was removed at an early stage. So here with an E2, if you start with an E2 operation and show the consultant that you have $100,000, $200,000, you're going to invest in business. Some of it is going to be for operational costs, for payroll. But then after you receive the visa, you remove the money and say it's a loan and you give the money back to whoever lent it to you. Then what?
Well, I would have a problem with that. I think that when you are investing and when you're doing E2, it needs to be renewed. You need to show that the business is still active, the investment is still active. And so you can't just withdraw just after getting a visa. You have to think about 2 years from now, what are you going to do with it? I look at it from my business and your business, Mona. We opened up our law firm and we don't take the money. Our investment is still here and operational. So if you are truly a investor doing business, you can't think about, I'm going to take the money out. Then what are you going to do?
Yep, I totally agree. I thought I'd throw that in. One other major issue.
Mm-hmm.
People used to file E2s because the source of funds issues used to be easier. Used to be. I stress that word. Mm. It has changed. USCIS have started looking at E2 almost in the same vein that they're looking at EB-5. Not quite as stringent, but what have you seen?
Well, yes, definitely the source of fund issue is being looked at by the consulate because it's called quote-unquote investment. I advise my clients not to use someone else's money, don't borrow it. And we do prepare a source of fund, and we always have source of fund tracking for E2 business as well.
So unlike EB-5, where you can take a loan, are you suggesting that you cannot take a loan for E2?
You tend to take the loan in a little different way, even in EB-5. You can take a loan based on your business, your insurance policy, but some sort of collateralized property that you own.
Yeah.
But I don't advise people to borrow money from a relative or anything like that. And I tend to tell my E2 clients not to take a loan without collateralizing.
Well, perhaps definitely not a loan, but perhaps, I mean, we have plenty of clients who have gifts, E2 gifts.
Yes, but again, we do track that just like we do with the EB-5 case. So if the relative cannot provide source of fund tracking, our advice is not to take that gift.
Jenny, what about automatic transitions to a green card? I know that's baked into EB-5, but how's that handled with an E-2 visa, or is it?
EB-5 is already an immigrant visa category, so that's not a transition. It is a green card category. E-2, because it's a non-immigrant visa, you have to take another step to become a green card holder. And there is no automatic transition. You can't just take an E-2 and make it into an EB-5. You have to file a immigrant petition. Different category.
But Jinhee, it is very possible to do an E2 to EB-5 petition. And I know you're going to say, well, there's no dual intent. And Mark, what dual intent means is that there are some visas, non-immigrant visas, where you cannot automatically, or you cannot show that you have the intention to file an immigrant visa. H1, for example, is a dual intent visa. E2 is not, even though I think, in my humble opinion, it should be. But there is a way to go from E2 to EB-5. But that's a topic for another discussion.
No, I mean, E2 business could become an EB-5, which I'm sure, you know, Mona can tell you a lot more. But it's not an automatic transition is what I was trying to say.
Right. I can also imagine it would get tricky when you do that transition from E2 to EB-5, because then they're looking at where did the funds come from. If they were generated inside the U.S. at an E2 business, maybe they won't consider that a foreign investment. What do you think about that, Jenny?
Well, I think that, the way I advise my client is that if the E2 business is doing really well, and as the owner and investor of the business, you can take a take that pay, save it, and
as
then
a foreign
reinvest.
National.
Right. Yeah. The profits
a
from an
E2 foreign national. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. The profits from an E2 business can be used for EB-5 purposes.
Absolutely.
But it should go through
you.
You. Yes. Just going to make that clear. Not save up a bunch of...
You can't just sit in the corporate bank account and then say, oh, that's EB-5. Yeah. No, you have to make the investment so you can take the profit, pay taxes on it, and then reinvest.
Well, you need a smart attorney to help you.
Yes.
And I'm glad we got a couple here.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Jenhee Wild, for coming back on EB-5 Investment Voice.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always so much fun to work with both of you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.